So, welcome to Golf Nerds. Today we've got Michael Romatowski, who's developed an amazing speed training program that appears to be helping golfers of all abilities. Ability's probably not quite the right word with regards to speed training, because it's just about speed. It's not about how good you are at golf. Although the two are probably very closely linked, they are still exclusive. Michael, I've been following you online for at least 12 months, probably longer. And your Mac 3 program just appealed to me from the moment I saw it. But before we get into that, how have you got into golf?
I started playing golf, so I'm 58 now. So I started playing when I was 27, seriously. And I just actually remember watching Jack Nicklaus win the 1986 Masters. And that kind of really got me interested in wanting to play, so I've been playing ever since. And I always have been in the fitness field. At a certain point, I decided I only wanted to work with golfers. And so for the last 20 years, basically, that's all I've done. I've done a lot of what I would call golf rehab, which is taking golfers who are injured, kind of segueing them back into the game. I moved to San Antonio about a year and a half ago, maybe almost 2 years. And at that point, decided to start the Mach 3 speed training program. So that's what we do here. I finally have all the space I need, both indoors and out. So it's been really fun to be able to bring this kind of training to people. And to, like you say, it's for golfers of every ability. There is no requirement in terms of how good you are. The only requirement is really that you're healthy, that you not be injured. If you're injured, you're not going to be in Mach 3 speed training. You're going to be at a lower level of program where we're trying to get you ready for Mach 3. So it's just been great. It's been a great thing here for the last 18 months.
I really find it interesting that without trying, I'm drawn to folks who haven't got the traditional background in golf that many people do. I became an assistant pro at age 18. I completed my assistantship at age 22, etc., etc., etc. You don't need me to continue that story. We've heard it 1,000 times before. So you were, personal trainer, fitness professional.
Yes.
Different words for the same thing, I think.
Yes.
I'm a phys ed graduate, and that's my route into golf. And so I guess from my British and now sort of overseas and developing world perspective, the thought of being a personal trainer who has the privilege of working exclusively with golfers, and then almost you've taken that niche even further, is incredible.
It has been. It has. That's a good word. It's been incredible. It's probably been to my advantage not to be from the world of golf instruction, because I don't come in with any preconceived notions of how I want a swing to look. We're looking basically for athletic patterns. And so that, I think, has been to my advantage. We don't teach the swing, so that's also to my advantage, because we're not competing with golf instructors and we're not competing with fitness instructors. We're just kind of melding those two worlds together in the spirit of athleticism is really what it is.
From my position in the podcast, I come to these conversations with a few notes, and then obviously I feed off what you say. And I've been running a program, it's golf in inverted commas program, for really small kids, sort of between 3 and 6 years old. And I found myself, as a phys ed graduate, we had an hour session once a week for, say, 12 weeks. And really, I was spending, if I say 20% on golf, I'd probably be exaggerating. But I like the 80-20 rule, so we're going to keep that. And then the rest of it was just general athletic ability. I was teaching kids how to jump, how to throw, you know, standing broad jumps, all those things that we learn, I guess, when we trained in generic sports coaching. Just because I thought, actually, for these kids, who knows if they're going to be golfers? I can introduce the equipment and some basic technique, but really what I want to do and what I think is best for these tiny kids is to try and make them into athletes.
Yeah, and I would totally agree with you. And our youngest kids, which are probably in the 7 to 8 year old range, we don't even have a club in their hand. We basically call that run, jump, and scream. We're trying to let them have as much fun as they can, all kinds of different athletic moves and patterns. We let them build their own obstacle courses and design their own race courses, and they kind of decide, they kind of run their own show. And it's a very loose golf affiliation, but I don't even believe that adults should be exclusive to just golf and just the golf swing. And so the centerpiece of the way we train is it's motion in all directions, and anyone can do it. So essentially, we're cross-training with just simply with the way that we train. So it's almost like playing a variety of different sports in order to train for golf.
That is fascinating. Simply because I love the idea of run, jump, and scream. I'd love to see you running that with adults. I've just done the US Kids Golf Certification, which you may or may not be aware of.
But yes, I am.
What I really took away from it was, why am I not coaching adults this way?
I would agree. You know, that's essentially what we're trying to do.
Yeah.
That's pretty much exactly what we're trying to do, is allow adults to move like a kid again. And the last thing in the world that we would ever do is say, you have to move in one exact pattern. I want you to have a million patterns. And I want 1,000 of them to be able to hit a good golf shot. So if you could describe to me as an instructor, say, what you thought was my perfect swing plane, I'm going to train above and below and all around that. And so the way that that translates on the course is any lie that you give me, uphill, downhill, side hill, heavy, rough, wet sand, restricted backswing, that I can figure out a way to do it. You know, and that I don't have this notion in my head that I only have one perfect swing and one perfect swing plane. And that's the way an athlete has to think. An athlete has to be very adaptable. And we're striving for more adaptability than repeatability.
You're preaching to the choir. You really are. I've been a golf coach 20 years. Formally, informally, however you want. I think really in the last 12 months, I started a journey of leaving behind essentially everything I know about golf coaching. And I did do that. I left some things behind, but I rediscovered some other stuff. I'm not ready to let go of Five Lessons by Hogan yet. But I'm also thinking about golf in a much more holistic way. And the concept of needing to have a golf swing that works at different planes, that you need to know how to swing with restrictions, be it a backswing restriction, a follow-through restriction, or whatever, they're not something I was ever taught to teach. But as a golfer, I was reading, you know, the old Nicklaus and Snead books, mainly because they were in the library where I lived when I was a kid.
Sure.
And they talk about these things, how to play from behind a tree or whatever. And somehow I think golf instruction has lost this. And I feel right now is rediscovering it. Because you're not alone in saying these things. I mean, apart from me, I've got a very, very small voice in this world. But your voice is much bigger, and I heard you were talking to some seriously influential people in golf, Chris Como, etc., a while back. How did they take to what you had to say?
Well, we had one workshop. So we've had many, many, many coaches come in from around the country in the last 6 months. And we had one particular workshop, and Chris happened to be at that one. But there were five or six very, very skilled, very smart, and especially technically skilled coaches in the same workshop. And so they use a lot of high tech in their approach, super smart guys. And I didn't even speak their language, to be honest. I mean, we went to lunch, and I sat there and ate my little pasta and never said a word because I had no idea what they were talking about with, you know, with all the new high-tech equipment. But
yeah,
it was really cool to see that they could, for lack of a better term, come down to my level, which is kind of the Neanderthal level in the world of golf, and understand that all I was trying to do was give people tools and patterns that made them adaptable and that made them, in the words of my friend David Ogren, masters of variability and not slaves to repeatability. And I think that they saw that message pretty clearly and they liked it. And that made me feel good. And, you know, what I'm doing is not rocket science at all. If it were, it wouldn't have come out of my brain. So it's very simple, but it enables people to move like a real person and not to be enslaved by the thought, like we already mentioned, that there's only one pattern and that they have to master that pattern. So the way that we train is with a very specific intention of where we're going to create the speed. And then the leap of faith that they have to make is that that intention will create the mechanics for them. So they won't have to intellectualize the parts of the swing, but they'll be able to just sense the motion as one entire motion.
Wow, Michael, I could link you to three or four people who say exactly the same things as you, in different words, from a different perspective, from a guy in the UK who quit the PGA after a year and tells his students, genuinely, just effing hit the ball. I didn't swear, but I had to stop myself. There is genius in that statement. And to another guy who I had... I recorded a podcast yesterday and published it yesterday, who goes into much more depth. He's a reader. His job is in commercial training. He's a fascinating golf coach, just part-time at the moment. And we come back to the same idea of a fluid motion. A motion that doesn't need to be repetitive to create a consistent outcome. There's so many other ways I could just rephrase the same thing, and I'm sourcing different people, and it's really exciting time to be in golf instruction. It's great to have been through the biomechanical phase of the last, let's say, 10 years. And I say that with the hugest respect for people like Michael Neff, who developed Gears Golf, or Brian Manzala, and those guys. That information has made me the coach I am, and I'm sure you're downplaying the learning and study you've done from those guys. But,
So, I'm sorry, I don't want to interrupt you. Please. But before this thought goes out of my head. So I am always so impressed with the coaches that come in here. They are so passionate and they are so smart. Believe me, when we have a workshop, I am very far from being the smartest person in the room. They're really sharp. And I watch them kind of in amazement because each coach seeks out the knowledge that is fascinating to them. That's really what it boils down to. So, you know, if you're a coach and you're your world of golf is enriched by the high technology, that's exactly what you should pursue. You know, there isn't any one way to do it. You should go after what fascinates you, and then your job is just to figure out how to get that across to a student. So for me, my favorite thing to do is teach our workshops. And I mean, I have met some teachers, both male and female, who I just love in terms of their style and their passion and the way that they go about it. And so none of us have exactly the same knowledge base or exactly the same style. But what you get is a real exchange of ideas. And, you know, the technology is not my thing, and it probably never will be my thing. But the coaches that come in are free to take my information back to their home base and put their own stamp on it in any way that they want. So what I hope for is that they will see what we do and like what we do and take what we do and make it their own. And I've seen that happen in a number of different ways as they go back to whatever part of the country they're from, and they implement Mach 3 with a very unique style. And so that's been very, very gratifying for me to watch that happen.
I can understand why you'd feel excited about that. So let's not forget that whereas I know more than the average person about Mach 3, I've not been to one of your workshops yet. Mm-hmm. But I've read and I've watched videos, and I'm part of some coaches groups on Facebook where you're very active. But for everyone else, in as much depth as you want to go, explain Mach 3 to me, please.
Mach 3 is based on one premise, and that is what we call speed out in front. So we do not teach the swing, but essentially what we're teaching a golfer is how to pilot their race car out of a curve. And it's a very simple concept, and it just takes a very firm intention. If you can imagine driving a race car out of a curve or into and out of a curve, where are you going to step on the accelerator? And once you understand that, and once you have a tool in your hands that enables you to feel what you want to do, you're going to go up 2 to 8 miles an hour, and that's going to happen in the first few minutes. And the beauty of it is that everybody walks in the door with that ability. Everybody comes in with speed that they simply have never accessed because they didn't know how to access it. So that is why we've been able to get average clubhead speed increase of 11 miles an hour across the board. Usually about half of that comes at the very first time that they come in, and then the rest of it will come through training. But everything we do, everything we say, everything we show anyone is based on the concept of speed out in front. And basically what that means is you're not going to dump your energy down into the ground. You're going to have an intention of creating your greatest speed well up, well past the ball. And so it's a matter of how you use your energy. So if you were to imagine, let's say a brand new golfer.
Yeah.
So the ball's on the ground. So the intuitive thing to do is to go up and then down and then up again, which is the least efficient way to do it. So
yes.
What we do, we give them it, we change the intention. To us, impact doesn't mean anything. It's not the moment of truth. It's not any more important than anything else along the path. What we want you to do is envision that the end of your swing, the finish, is impact. And we want you to speed up past the ball. So the feeling is almost like you're still accelerating even after the ball is gone. So the only thing you need to do that is a tool that helps you feel it. And we have several of those. And once you feel that, you should be faster and you should never lose that. So let's say that eventually a golfer gained 12 miles an hour with us.
Yeah.
Usually about six of that would come in the very first session from the concept, and then the other six from training for a few weeks after that. So if you do that and then you stop training, eventually you'll lose the 6 miles an hour that you trained for. but you should never ever lose what came from the concept. You should own that, and from that moment on, you should always be faster than you were before. And everybody has that.
And I presume if people come to you, they pick up their 6 miles an hour through the door, they train with you, however they choose to do that, and pick up another 6 miles an hour. You then give them ways to sustain that, because no one wants to give away 6 miles an hour clubhead speed.
Yeah, so we have classes every week. We have 8 classes a week here, but also we have various ways of delivering home programs, and so they can keep training. Our biggest thing, to be honest, is training coaches how to do it, because then they can take it back to a large number of students, and we can kind of spread it that way much faster. So our big thing is we have the coaches' workshops here. We're starting to hold them around the country also. And we have an online closed secret Facebook group that they can be a member of for a monthly fee, so that it's kind of just a continuing education from that point on. But it's a very, very simple concept, but you have to have a way of feeling it first. You have to have a way of feeling what we want you to do and seeing that it actually works, and then it's yours forever. And the beauty of it is, there aren't different programs for, let's say, different age groups or different genders or different abilities of golfer. Everybody actually does the exact same program.
Oh, I love that.
And so we've had, you know, a scrawny little middle school kid training right alongside a world long drive competitor doing the exact same workout. And it works for both.
So let me stop you just for a second. This is great. I just want to tick some boxes that I know people will ask me about or ask you about. So your program delivers these results. You've mentioned players of abilities, ages, and all that sort of thing. So let's be clear about that. If a 28 handicapper, a golfer who's 50 years old walks in through the door, from your experience, you're saying he's going to walk out of the door after the session with a, on average, 6 mile an hour clubhead gain?
It's going to be somewhere between 2 and 8.
Somewhere between 2 and 8. And if he continues with your program for X number of weeks, you alluded to 4 or something?
He's going to gain another 2 to 8. So each of the initial experience is worth 2 to 8 miles an hour. The training itself is worth another 2 to 8. So they're going to go up 4 to 16 miles an hour. And it doesn't, as long as you're healthy, all right, that's not going to happen if you're injured. You won't even be in the program if you're injured. But as long as you're healthy, that's going to happen. And the only reason I say that with confidence is I've seen it happen about 272 out of 275 times here in the last 18 months. And I'm not even telling you anything that I think, because you don't need to care what I think. I'm telling you what I know because I've seen it. And so in the last 18 months, we've had the luxury of being able to jettison everything we've tried that didn't work. And I don't care whose theory it is. It could be Albert Einstein's theory. If it didn't work, we threw it out. So what we're left with now is just everything that worked the best. And when you come in, you're going to go up. That's just what's going to happen, because you're no different than the other 275 people that came in, as long as you're healthy. You're going to learn when to step on the accelerator. You're going to learn what that feels like. And then hopefully you're going to stick around and train also, and you're going to get in better shape, which lays a foundation of even more speed gains. So 4 to 16, you know, that's what's going to happen.
So just you've hinted at it, but I'm going to clarify. Golfers of any age, gender, and golfing ability see these gains.
I would say that, let's put it this way, under 8 years old, the results would be so erratic that we don't even have a club in their hand.
Of course. Sorry, yeah.
Over age 72, you may struggle more than younger people to go up as much. We have everybody goes up, but if you're mid-70s, early 80s in age, you may have a ceiling there. Our biggest age group of people that come to the classes is actually 50 to 65, and they've actually outperformed everyone else. They actually have an average increase of 12.5 miles an hour. So you say to yourself, well, how can that be? Because those are the people that have always been told they can't get faster. They've always been told, don't even bother trying because you're too old and you're not explosive enough, whatever, whatever. But the people that say that don't understand that everybody walks in with speed already, that you don't have to change one muscle fiber in their body for them to get it. You just have to show them how to pilot the race car out of curve. Everybody has that. It doesn't depend on some elaborate, multi-layered conditioning program to change muscle fiber types or anything like that. It's nothing to do with that. It's simply allowing them to access speed that they already have.
And then you've talked then about one end of the market, this sort of the older golfer. What about your long drive guys? Surely they bring you an efficient swing.
Yeah, they were an incredible eye-opener, I will tell you that. So the first guy we had who is a world long drive competitor is Tyler Barton, who I believe right now is ranked number 47, something like that, in the world.
Okay.
Well, he came in, and the guy is built like a NFL strong safety. You know, he's all muscle. He's not particularly big as long drive guys go. He's probably 6 feet tall and 200 pounds, but all muscle. Very explosive athlete. And I thought, well, can he actually go up? He's already so fast. And in two sessions, he was up 11 miles an hour. And so that's when I knew, all right, well, there's no limits on this. Everybody has it. Everyone. Then we had Jeff Flagg come in, who won the World Long Drive a few years ago. He actually came to a workshop about 6 weeks ago, I think. And while he was here, he went up 9 miles an hour on TrackMan.
That's incredible.
We had TrackMan in here that day. Yeah. So the question is this. So you got to ask yourself, how is it that a guy that fast can get that much faster? And how is it that the exact same program works for everyone? And the only answer is because it's not dependent on your body physiology. At the foundational level, it's dependent on your understanding of a concept and just somebody giving you a way to feel it. So that's why a long drive competitor and a 52-year-old woman, you know, secretary, can do the exact same thing and get the same results because it's not dependent on your physiology. And once you start training, your physiology kicks into play. The better athlete you are, the more explosive athlete you are, the more potential you probably have to go up. But it's not a factor at the foundational level.
So that raises one question, and it's slightly more controversial.
Mm-hmm.
Your long drive golfers and your top level golfers, the question to me then is, why were they so slow?
They weren't slow.
No, but then why had no one discovered? No, why had no one worked it out on their own?
Well, I am not an expert on the world of long drives, you know, so I don't want to venture too far into answering that. You know, I just do what I do, and we've had long drive competitors come in. So I don't really know what they've done in the past with their training or and how they were instructed. I only know what happened when they came in here. And at first it surprised me, but then as time went on and I saw that every level of golfer gets the same results from the same approach. It just is a matter of a concept. That's all it is. It's so simple that once you understand it, you want to knock yourself upside the head and say, why didn't I ever think of that before?
I think that was my question, really, is if I was reigning long drive champion and I walked into your gym and put 5 miles an hour on my club head speed, I'd be like, why have I wasted all this money on coaching when some guy has just done what I've paid thousands of dollars to get in 20 minutes?
I don't see it that way, really, though, because they come in and they're incredible athletes and they're very, very fast. You know, and like I say, I can't make any meaningful comment on how any of them are trained because I'm not really a part of that world other than when they've come into this gym. So yeah. The way I view that is a very well-coached, well-trained, very explosive athlete who was able to benefit from the same thing in here as everyone else. And I mean, I will tell you that made me feel good. I will also say for the highest level golfers that we have, when they come in, you're always kind of holding your breath because you don't want them to be the first guy that didn't go up, you know? So, I mean, I'm human. I have those thoughts when we get a high-level collegiate or a tour-level player or a long drive guy. But fortunately, the concept is the concept, and it works for everyone. We had a kind of a tipping point moment because I had people tell me they thought I was making the numbers up. And we had a Facebook Live one day. We had a college tournament in town, and they got rained out. And so one of the teams came in just kind of on the spur of the moment, both the men's and the women's team. And we did a Facebook Live, so it was on live camera. And we took at random one of their players and ran him through what's called our speed check. And he was averaging 119 on our device, which is about 113-ish on a track map.
Yeah.
So as I'm writing these numbers down, I'm thinking, oh, God.
I hope
you go up, you know, because he was already very fast. But he went from 119 to 131.
Wow.
On camera. So there was no way to say I was faking that. And then we took the slowest girl on the team. She was swinging at 75, and she went up to 83. So that was a big help because it enabled people to see the scenario unfold in live action. And that was kind of a big tipping point for us. And I can understand where the skepticism comes from because mainly all we've ever heard is only young, very athletic athletes can learn to swing faster. But really, we're all carrying it around with us. It's just a matter of understanding how to do it. So that, you know, you're going to go up 2 to 8 before you've even trained, is what I'm saying. So at that level, that foundational level, it doesn't have anything to do with your training. So I'm very, very confident
that
if you walked in, the same thing's going to happen with you.
I'd either take off 3 miles an hour or add 30. That's where I'm sitting here trying to work out. Do you have any players you look at on tour, on TV, and you think, he's got it? I've never met that guy, but I can see from his swing that he's got it.
Well, I see golf swings in a certain way. I see how a person uses their energy and physically how they use their ribcage. So by looking at that, I can kind of tell how much any given golfer, what the potential is for them to go up in speed, because the strongest, fastest, most powerful strikers of a golf ball use their rib cage in a certain way. And we try mightily here not to venture into any technical aspect of the swing, but I could sit you down and show you a couple dozen videos and you'll see the same thing, that they use their rib cage in a certain way. And they create more speed out in front than golfers that are less powerful strikers of the ball.
Name a name. Name a name, then. Tell me someone who you like.
Well, I don't want to really go there.
Okay.
Because I'm not a golf instructor. I don't want to pretend that I am, and I don't want to get into analyzing swings. But in the world of watching an athlete use their body and project their energy, there's a certain way to do it that will allow you to be effortlessly faster. And so the key word there is effortlessly, meaning we're not asking anyone to swing harder. We've never done that. If we did that, you'd probably swing slower because you're going to dump your energy too soon. So there's a way to achieve speed out in front just with a pure intention and with a tool that enables you to feel it. But when you see somebody do it, you'll see they use their ribcage differently. And I'm not saying they use the ribcage differently on purpose. It's just something that happens when their intention is speed out in front and when they use their energy to achieve that. So if I ever meet you, I will definitely sit you down and I'll show you what I mean. But I don't want to name names of golfers because that's just not my... I'm no golf swing expert at all, and I don't really want to go there when there are so many people out there more knowledgeable than I am in golf swing technique. But fortunately, we don't rely on that. So we get results without teaching the swing.
So those people who live within a commute of your facility have the privilege of stopping by and joining the program in a traditional way.
Correct.
You run something online, don't you?
Yeah. So we have two online Facebook groups. One is called Mach 3 Online, and it's for coaches.
Yep.
And so they pay a monthly fee, and that puts them kind of in the inner circle where we're giving them very detailed weekly workouts and with full video support. But most importantly, they can request at any time any videos they want, any explanations of any concepts, any reinforcement of any of our concepts. So basically, it puts them in an inner circle where they can constantly ask for more information, and we provide that. And then there is a similar group for golfers, individual golfers, that's called Jet Express.
Yeah.
And it's a closed secret Facebook group, just like the coaches group. They pay a monthly fee. They only use three of our tools and one other conditioning tool. So the coaches are using our full array of training tools. The individual golfers in their group are just using three. It's kind of a stripped down version. And they also get weekly workouts and any videos that they need and any videos that we post from day to day that illustrates the concepts more easily. So we have that. We also are working on posting our entire off-season, pre-season, and in-season programs on a couple of different online entities. So those will be kind of a one-time purchase. You could purchase the Mach 3 preseason or in-season or off-season program, and that'll be a whole series of PDFs and videos. The main thing we really like, though, is for people to come to the workshops, and that's why we're starting to take our show on the road more. So up to this point, everybody's been coming here to Texas, but we're going to be in Maryland next month. We're going to be in Chicago month after that. We're going to be up in New Jersey and Arizona. So we're going to really be taking our show on the road and hoping that we can teach as many coaches out there as possible and golfers how to do what we do. It's not a difficult thing to learn. You know, most of them, the comment that I most appreciate is when they say, "I appreciate how simple this is." Because what I want is for these coaches to be able to take it home and hit the ground running with something. So, you know, we're not trying to create a scenario where only an advanced expert can run Mach 3. We're trying to create something that is very user-friendly, that's very easy to understand. You do need some tools. You do need a little bit of space. But if you have those things, anyone can do it.
So the tools I'm going to imagine are available on your website, so I'm just going to pass that for a second. How much space does a golfer or a coach need to follow the program outside of your facility?
The program, as we do it here, I would say you need a space that's at least 25 by 25 feet, and maybe a little bigger is even better. So let's go, say, 30 by 30. We did develop some tools and a protocol for those who are limited in space. So that's not going to be as many tools, but it's still very effective. We kind of took a long time to make sure that what we were giving them was as effective for developing speed. Most of our tools utilize some form of a long rope.
Yeah.
And that's why more space is needed. But we were able to develop some things that can be actually used just in like one hitting bay. So it can be done. You know, originally we were mostly teaching coaches who had big junior academies, and we were teaching them how to run group classes.
Yeah.
Then we got more and more teachers in who are one-on-one instructors. And so we began also developing protocols for them. So now we pretty much have covered all the bases where whether you're running groups or individual lessons, we've got something that you can use, and that will work. We're very dedicated to throwing out anything that doesn't work. So we have tried a lot of things that in theory should have worked, and they didn't. And we just got rid of them because I'm only interested in what works the best. And if you can run your program that way, then you end up only with the most productive methods. And so that's what we have.
So what you're saying is ideally you need actually quite a big space, a gymnasium really of sorts. But golfers and coaches, if they've got enough room to swing a club, there is equipment for them to get involved in the program.
Yes, there is, because our two main pure speed training tools, which are called a speed bomber and a jet stick, those just require enough room to stand there and swing. So that you can absolutely gain speed with those two tools and a single hitting bay or a single hitting mat, whatever. All the rest of the tools are basically for conditioning and for what we call patterning, meaning developing cleaner, more athletic patterns. It would be interesting for you if you were here. The one thing that you would notice, if I showed you 15 different tools, you would probably say to me, you can't swing any of those over the top. So all of them, no matter what they look like, they promote a more shallow path.
Okay.
There's no way that you would ever swing any of these things over the top. So right then and there, if you're training with these tools, you're getting more and more efficient.
Yeah.
Right? And if you have the proper intention, meaning you're trying to create the most speed up and way past the ball, you're not only not going to come over the top and steeply down, but you won't dump your energy too soon either. So if you can imagine this, if your intention is way up past the ball, out in front of the ball, toward the finish of your swing, to be the strongest and fastest you can there, you would never, ever come steeply over the top because that doesn't match up with your intention. So a lot of the moves, the quote-unquote swing faults that people make, they disappear with these tools because they make no sense with these tools.
That is truly, truly fascinating. And it makes a whole world of sense because, and just taking that one example, an over-the-top move is inefficient energy-wise, and so obviously any drill or practice you undertake to become more efficient in how you use the energy in your swing must eliminate that. Otherwise, it's just not fit for purpose. Yeah.
Right. So if you think about it, over the top is a downward energy move. Okay. If you imagine a swing path that's steeply over the top, down and across, you're dumping your energy downward. So with us, there's only one path of energy, and that's up. There's no such thing as up, down, up. There's no such thing as down. It's only up. So if you set up to the ball and all of your focus is up, so for a right-handed golfer, let's call it up to the left. If all of your focus is there, there's a whole host of poor mechanical moves that you would never make because they simply don't match up with the destination. So if you took a brand new golfer, the first thing you want to show them is where they're going to finish.
Yeah.
Right? So in essence, we only teach the finish. We've never said a single word about backswings and downswings ever.
Well, I was just stopping silently there to think about that, which is terrible, terrible stuff for a podcast. I've said it in previous podcasts, but I'll say it now. I invite people onto my podcast who I want to talk to and who I want to learn from. That's my barrier. And so because I want to learn from you, I'm now, as if I'm a listener to the podcast, I'm sitting there, I would have pressed pause and just had to think about that. But I can't put you on pause, Michael. So, just bringing our time to a close, if a golfer was really invested in you and your content, but in reality, they either financially or practically just didn't have the ability to join one of your programs, are there any drills you could give them just to move them in the right direction? I'm not expecting the full program.
No, I understand. No. So what I would give them is our two most basic tools. They would have to purchase them, obviously, and then we would send them videos of the main drills. So that in its most basic form would be it. It would take two tools and the accompanying videos, and they, as long as they understand the concept, which they can easily see from the videos, they're going to go up. They have to go up. You know, I can't envision a reason why they wouldn't, because in all likelihood, everybody's walking in here with somewhat of an inefficient way of using their energy. And when you can make that better, they have to be faster. It's just like if Usain Bolt runs two 100-yard dashes, and one is a 9.2 and one is a 9.9. By definition, the 9.2 was more efficient.
Yeah.
Right? So it's all about efficiency. It doesn't have anything to do with swinging harder. You know, we've never had anybody fall down or jump out of their shoes or spin around or have to run up like Happy Gilmore and slash at the ball. If you look at videos of our golfers' fastest swings, their balance is perfect and it looks effortless. It should feel like less effort when you do it correctly. So to get back to your question, sorry I wandered.
No, that's fine.
I do have a website. It's just myname.com. So it's michaelromatowski.com. And anybody could go on there and click on training tools, and they could purchase what is called a speed bomber and a jet stick, and then they would get the accompanying videos, and they could make progress with that, because those are the two tools that I would call pure speed.
Fantastic, Michael. Michael, I think you've made the record for my longest podcast so far. But that's
quite an achievement.
Yeah, I try and keep them compact because personally I get frustrated when I'm listening to something and it takes 3 days if it's 2 hours long. So thank you so much for your time. I'm definitely going to have a look at your website and I'm definitely going to think about when I can get stateside for one of your workshops. I'm also, while you were talking, was thinking about this gymnasium I know that I could probably rent out, which I imagine is how you started. Before you got your own space, I guess you just rented somewhere by the hour.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, much for me to mull over, and hopefully for my listener too, much for them to mull over. Thank you so much for your time, Michael. Just before you go, you said your website is michaelromatowski.com. Is there any other way people can get in touch with you?
Our email is a great way, which is Mach3SpeedTraining@gmail.com.
Fantastic. I will put all of that in the notes that accompany the podcast, and I'm sure your inbox will be as full as it was yesterday because you're super popular.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you, Michael. Cheers.